you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to The Fandom Files. We are a Sci-Fi Wire podcast about people who really, really love stuff. I'm Jordan Zachrin, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette, who is she's an editor at Contently. Emily, what's up?
Not much. What's up?
Not much. I made an and versus a error.
Oh, just then?
Yeah.
I thought you were surprised somehow.
No, I'm surprised. I'm an editor and I messed that up. Anyways, what's going on?
I am end editor.
End editor. What's going on?
I'm really good, actually. This is like my third week of this fitness kick I've been on.
Oh, tell us more.
So I've like completely redone what I eat. I'm actually, for the first time in my life, I'm like focused on how much protein I should get a day and what's excessive calorie wise. Notice I'm avoiding saying that I'm dieting.
What has the change led you to do? This focus, what has this led you to change?
You mean like nitty gritty eating habits?
What did you have for lunch today versus what you would have had last month, maybe?
I go to Chopped a lot.
Okay.
Last month, I would have had like a double cheeseburger and fries.
Oh, wow. That's a big change.
Oh, yeah. Like I was consuming so much salt. And fat because I love it.
Sure.
But I've found that it's only been 3 weeks and I was truly addicted. Like I'm calmer now. I have energy throughout the day. I used to like, it was like any kind of sweet or salty or cheesy thing in front of my face. I literally never said no.
And so now you feel better.
I do. I like, obviously the goal for me is, well, not obviously, whatever, is weight loss, but I haven't even seen changes there yet, but I feel like so much better,
right?
Mentally,
I have been trying to eat different lunches. Like I used to eat a lot of salads, actually, but I'm trying to eat more like cooked foods and proteins because I was eating too many salads.
That's what helps.
Isn't that weird?
No, it's not weird because like a salad. Well, actually, I was going to say a salad. You're never going to go wrong, but you totally will.
Sure.
Because there are brands out there. I'm not going to call anyone out, but their salads are like 700 calories. Like,
yeah,
you might as well just have a burger at that point. Anyway, it has helped a lot that my boyfriend and I cook at home a lot now.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
You know, I try occasionally, once in a while, I'll go a month without sugar or added sugar. And the first week is tough.
It is.
You know, because you just want so much of it. And then you feel so much better.
Yeah, you really do.
And then when you fall back into it, you're like, how, I can't believe I didn't eat this for a month. It's so good. And then a month later, you're like, oh my God, why did I go back to it? I feel terrible.
Yeah. Well, I've also been using that Couch to 5K app. And I think that I've signed up for a 5K in late September.
Okay.
I think I can do it.
Nice. Yeah. You know, I was in Disney World a few weeks ago, which was on the show a couple weeks ago. And I ate like crap for the first day or two I was there. And I had like chicken nuggets and fries, and they gave us a lot of free foods, which helped.
Sure.
And then by Saturday, I was like, I can't do this anymore.
It's a lot of walking, too.
It is like, true, yeah. But I just like couldn't eat crappy anymore. And I had like a sandwich instead of cheeseburger and fries and nuggets, and I felt so much better.
We're old.
It really is true. I used to be able to house everything.
Mm-hmm.
And now I like, you know what I think about a lot? This is not necessarily my truth, but you remember Big Daddy when...
Yeah.
Adam Sandler's like, now I eat a cheeseburger, my ass jiggles for a week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think about that a lot. I don't know why.
That exact quote.
I have Adam Sandler on the brain. I've now seen Hotel Transylvania 3 times.
Are you serious?
I am.
I was enjoying the trailer and Cam could tell when we saw Incredibles. And afterward, he was like, did you seriously think that was funny? I was like, yeah, some of the jokes are funny.
I've seen it thrice.
Why?
Well, okay, so the first time I didn't see the full movie the first time. I was at a Sony preview thing where they showed their upcoming slate. Saw Into the Spider-Verse also, which was pretty cool. Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, parts of it. They haven't finished it.
Sure.
Then I saw it again a couple weeks ago, the full thing, so I could interview Jenny Tartatovsky, the director.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's great.
I love him.
Really smart, fun, interesting guy, and the story went up today actually. Find it on sci-fi.com. And so we did that. We had a nice long conversation. I'm sure he doesn't remember me. That's fine.
He has a crazy long career.
Yeah. He's been doing this forever and he's still young.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And then this past weekend, I took my kind of quasi niece and nephew to see it with Julia.
That
and,
instead of The Incredibles too?
Well, I took them to see that already.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. Right. And they loved it. They were like
cool.
Losing their minds.
Yeah.
And so I've seen it three times. And the best part is the fart jokes.
Sure.
There's a fart joke where...
I think I've seen it in the trailer.
Yeah.
Garlic.
Dracula's garlic and just farts. He's just garlic intolerant. And then it's funny how you can remember things totally different or just slightly different and it becomes entrenched in your brain.
Yeah.
The daughter eats some garlic and farts.
Uh-huh.
And in my mind, the Andy Samberg character said, "Sweet tooth, babe," in my mind. And so I told Julia about it. So I was waiting the entire time. I like, you know, was like, "It's coming, it's coming, it's coming."
Right.
And then he goes, "Cool toot, honey." And I was like, "What?" And it's like not
your
that different.
Your version's funnier.
Right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Like, I guess sweet toot, babe sounds more like something he would say.
Like a surfer dude would say, yeah.
So, but I was so convinced it was sweet toot, babe.
That's a better line. It's a little more like character. But I guess they're getting older at this point, the characters. So they probably made it honey.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it can't be. And he's not really maturing that much. He's like a bar mitzvah DJ throughout this whole thing.
Mm. I was digging myself a hole when Cam was like, "Wait, wait, wait." And I was like, "Yeah, I saw the first two. Why wouldn't I see the third one?"
That makes it even
and
worse.
I was like, the chemistry between the two like romance leads in the first one is surprisingly good. And he was just like the vampire daughter.
You're like, the physical chemistry was off the charts.
I'm just saying, you know, because Andy Samberg, the guy's going to come off cute.
Sure.
It's his voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's fine. That's fair. Yeah. When this podcast comes out, we'll be a few days out from Comic-Con in San Diego. And Sci-Fi Wire will be there. We will be talking to people famous and not famous. I shouldn't say it. That sounds terrible. Important and not important. We'll have a studio there. We'll be talking to people with publicists, you know, famous people and semi-famous people.
Uh-huh.
But also, I will be out there with Caitlin, who has co-hosted this show before.
Mm-hmm.
She's an associate editor, good friend of yours.
Well, now she's my nemesis.
Right, that's true. Yeah, she's gunning for your job. Your brunch buddy and nemesis, Caitlin Bush. She is going to be there with me, and we're going to be hopefully talking to people on the Hall H line.
Cool.
We're going to talk to cosplayers.
Great.
We do a couple episodes over there. You'll be missed, but I will never forget our time at Comic-Con last year.
Oh, God.
That was your first time at Comic-Con.
That was my first, and honestly, my last.
Like, well, you've changed careers since a little bit. But
yeah, but I don't really want to go back.
You know what? So Comic-Con is a lot. It's overwhelming. I enjoy it, despite kind of all the difficulties of it.
Yeah.
I have fun there. I think it's interesting. And as a press member, I get to kind of go where I want, which helps.
That's the key.
Yeah. So I really do enjoy Comic-Con a lot. It can be overwhelming your first time there, but I think what maybe put a sour taste in your mouth was the fact that we were staying out at the highway between two strip clubs and a Mexican seafood takeout restaurant.
Mexican seafood takeout.
That's the worst part.
Yeah.
Like, worse than the strip clubs.
I remember, I think we might have angrily calculated out, like, the cost of all the cabs we had to take.
Yes.
Would have made a better hotel room fine.
It was, you know what the thing was? The hotel wasn't the worst thing. It was just so far away from everything.
And happened to be in the middle of the most depressing area
in
California I've ever seen.
Like, we were in a strip mall in between, like, strip clubs.
Yes.
It was
like Hall H, and then we were where Lady Bird grew up.
We were in the Florida Project. It was so bad. And it took so long to get to Hall H every day.
Oh, my God.
To the convention center.
It was so long. And God bless them all. All the drivers were like, "So, Comic-Con." And you had to explain the whole thing you were doing again. And they hated you because they're like, "Get out of my town."
Yeah. And it was also really sad. Like, we couldn't even get... Remember the one time we couldn't even get there for breakfast in time? And
oh no.
And they're like, "All right, fine, we're gonna cook you something pathetic and charge you double." We didn't realize that the pity food they gave us.
Yeah, we paid like $40 per person.
And the boss, the owner of our old employer, inverse.com, he was like, "I got you guys, got a comped hotel, it's gonna be pretty sweet." And he told us this like 6 months before we went.
Yeah.
So we were just like, "All right, guess we don't have to take care of that."
And then booked like two red-eye flights there and back.
Oh, God, yeah. What a... You know what? We got a lot done. So we were productive there?
Yeah, we did.
You hung out with Adi Shankar, did a good story. You did a lot of good stuff. But the whole time we were there was travel and everything was pretty ridiculous.
It was nuts. I truly hope that your trip this time is better.
Well, we're staying like 2 blocks from the convention center.
Ugh, nice.
So it's going to have to be better.
Also, last year, sci-fi was freaking everywhere.
Yeah, they're going to be everywhere this year.
Yeah.
And they're going to be, it's not going to be, I don't think there's going to be a live broadcast the way they did last year.
Are they doing a marching band?
I'm not sure if we're going to have a marching band, but Sci-Fi Wire is going to be like the branding there.
Cool.
Not just sci-fi, Sci-Fi Wire.
Interesting.
There's going to be panels. Orlando Jones and Aisha Tyler are doing a panel.
Cool.
Great debates with us.
Awesome.
TV shows, Night Flyers. I'm not sure if they're doing a panel. Oh, I should know this. I know that Happy and Krypton are doing them.
Oh, cool.
And Winona Earp coming back.
Yeah, they had a New York Times.
Yeah, that was huge.
Piece.
Yeah. Our publicist like tweeted that the full thing.
I bet.
The spread. That's got to be, I mean, people love that show.
Oh, people adore it.
Yeah.
It has changed like so many women's lives.
Yeah. So they're going to be there and everyone will be very excited. So if you see me, you don't know what I look like because I'm on a podcast.
Just listen to his voice and imagine.
Yeah, I'll be screaming the entire time. If you see some kind of schmucky guy with a backpack going, well, you see a schmucky guy with a backpack and podcast gear and still,
still
wearing a Mets hat.
Yeah.
Not cosplaying, but God, I'm just going to look
and
like every other.
Salad?
It's like a bunch of white guys there.
It is, yeah.
If you see, I mean, Caitlin, I don't want to like describe her on air because I don't want her to be stalked.
Yeah, true.
Look, if you happen to
you're
see
gonna
me.
You're going to be under sci-fi like
that's
branding.
True. Yeah, I'm going to be wearing a sci-fi shirt at all times.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Look, if you see me, come say hi and try to be on the podcast. If you don't see me, well, I guess there's nothing I can say about that. then I'm dead. All right, we should get to our guest now.
On that note, sure.
So today's guest is Lindsay Ellis, who is one of the smartest film critics working today and a pioneering one because she does it all on YouTube. Yeah, there are a lot of YouTube movie talkers, but Lindsay actually knows her stuff. And she's really funny, and she's taught me a lot from afar. I mean, I've never spoken to her other than the past few minutes we did, just chatting before we got this going. But really smart, knows her stuff, and honestly, I've never thought so hard about Transformers. So thank you for that.
Yes.
Lindsay, what's going on?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Doing well. We are getting ready for Comic-Con and sitting here talking about Transformers videos before we spoke to you. So.
My condolences.
You know, so your channel, you're known for a lot of things, but the Transformers videos, I think, might be your calling card. Would you say that?
Up until this year, yes. Yeah. We did the Hobbit videos got a lot of attention. So
yes.
I think that too, but I guess as an actual miniseries itself, yeah, I'd say the whole plate is kind of like the, because it's such an easy pitch. It's like it's like whatever you say, like you do broad spectrum video essays, usually on the topic of film, but sometimes not. That kind of makes people's eyes cross. But if you say like, yes, I have a mini series where I discuss film theory topics using only Michael Bay's Transformers, people are like, oh.
Right, yeah. Because like even when you talk about in the auteur theory one, you know, eyes can glaze over talking about old French guys. But then when you bring it to Michael Bay, it's like, all right, I get it.
Yeah, people immediately know what Michael Bay's aesthetic is, even if they've hardly seen any Michael Bay movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that was why I felt like this, because like in all of the, you know, elements of the Transformers movies go to 11, which is why I thought it was like a really easy, to me, really easy. I mean, the movies are not easy to watch, but like they're really easy to filter through that lens in a way that people will find accessible but not threatening.
Well, sure. Yes, everything in a Michael Bay movie, you just need to know it's in the trailer. So it's not that you don't have to be that wise. You don't have to have a huge experience with Michael Bay movies, like you said, to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So before you got to the Michael Bay universe, let's kind of, if you could bring us through your journey, like you went to film school, you went to NYU. So how did you get to this point in your career that you've got a huge following and are known for, you know, a lot of smart film talk?
Well, that's a bit of a fraught question, but I'll try to be diplomatic with it. I graduated from undergrad right as the economy was crashing. So in my undergraduate education, I majored in film studies, like any good person who wants to live in debt forever. And film studies is basically what I talk about on my channel. It's, you know, effectively, it's sort of like an English degree, but it's with the focus on history of film rather than the history of like literature. But, you know, they share a lot of the same elements. But the thing about film studies is it tends to focus a lot more heavily on theory and sociology and psychology than English, which is much more on history and context. But, you know, there's a lot of overlap. So then, you know, graduate college, I'm working for Nielsen, I get laid off, the economy crashes. So I'm like, I'm going to go to grad school.
Even more debt.
Like, what else are you going to do? And like, you know, as egotistical as I was like, I can only apply to the top film school. So I applied to NYU and USC and I got into one of them, which was USC. And around the same time, I started working for a website that, I no longer affiliated with, and I, we don't, but, that was where I got my start. And, so while I was in film school, I kind of spent a few years phoning it in, making movie reviews. And then I got my degree eventually, but yeah. I dropped out around 2011 and, kind of kept doing the movie review thing while also I started working in, professionally as an assistant editor. I worked in post-production. I worked for the Pokemon company for a little while, or rather the company that produces the anime for the Pokemon company. And I worked on some documentaries. I worked for Al Jazeera. I worked for the History Channel very briefly. And basically was just kind of coasting like on both sides. I was kind of coasting on video. I was kind of coasting as a professional editor, not really trying very hard at either. And then one day, a couple years ago, I kind of decided I needed to like pick one and quit half-assing it and kind of take, you know, all these things seriously. So I, you know, finished my degree at USC. I started doing YouTube full time. And, you know, my, so most of the vast majority of like subscribers and Patreon backers I've gotten in the last 2 years. So, you know, the quitting half-assing has paid off, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
That's discouraging. I love half-assing things.
I know, right? It's so easy. But people can tell. That was my thing. Like, because I feel like a lot of I got a lot of resistance in my early years because I think, you know, part of it was like the basic misogyny of the internet, but a large part of it was people could tell that like I, you know, wasn't really trying. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of hard for me to watch some of those earlier videos because I could just see like I just didn't care. I didn't mix the sound very well. The writing took me like 5 minutes.
You know what's interesting is that we work in this field. By we, I mean Emily and I, where it's all written word. Obviously, we're doing a podcast now, but as an editor at Sci-Fi, I get so many pitches all the time, and everyone wants to be a film critic. And you went in the direction of doing it on YouTube. I know you started working with a channel that must not be named. But what was the plan, always to present it in a video form, or did you just kind of fall into that?
No, I honestly kind of fell into it. And part of the reason why I think I eventually did become more comfortable with the format of YouTube was the rise of the popularity, in at least in film discussion YouTube, of the video essay, and especially like, you know, formative in that subgenre is every frame of painting, mm-hmm. Which it was created by Tony Zhu, and his success kind of opened the door for like, oh, we don't have to do teardown videos. There is a market for much more in-depth and interesting discussion that isn't hot takey and isn't just like, you know, bad Mystery Science Theater knockoff where you summarize the movie and then make jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be on YouTube because I kind of kept staying on YouTube because there's more money on YouTube than there is in like freelance writing.
Sure.
Cause I, I mean, I was also doing like professional freelance writing for years at the same time that I was working on YouTube. But like around the same time that it kind of started picking up, like I was writing for the Mary Sue, and I did a couple things for Vox.com. And around that time, it sort of clicked that like this, that the shift in the format, if you know how to edit, the video essay can be a more effective way of film writing than the traditional written essay, because you can use pieces of the film to get your point across, mm-hmm. and to get your point across effectively. And that, I think, is sort of like, that's still kind of really underutilized in mainstream academia. It's mostly writing. But I think that it's a really good way of getting people interested in, you know, media studies, in, you know, critical thinking. All you need is the media itself. And if you can put it into context, or like, especially like with lots of different, you know, types of the same phenomenon, like a certain type of lighting or a certain type of editing, that makes it more accessible. And that kind of shows that there's a market for this sort of mainstreamified edutainment, so to speak. And so feeling like I was sort of helping to develop a new format, is what kind of ultimately made me shift my focus to YouTube full time.
Sure. So what, what's the market like now on YouTube? How has it changed since you started? Do you balance sponsors or ads? You mentioned Patreon.
I actually just signed my first sponsorship deal.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm a little nervous because I always kind of thought it was in, bad taste to do both Patreon and paid sponsorships.
Get your money.
Well, I mean, the person who kind of talked me into this was CGP Gray, who is very, very, very successful at both. He's very, very big on Patreon, but he also is very good at integrating paid sponsorships in a way that is organic. I hope he doesn't mind me name dropping him, but I just signed with his, I just signed with his network, Standard, which is going to be like my first, Audible tie-in. So, that's going to be a fun experiment. We'll see how it goes.
Cool.
Is it like you're going to be part of the network instead of independent now? Or are they going to kind of put their name on the show? How will it work?
Basically, I mean, different networks work in different ways. It's not an MCN. It's, in this case, more of like a sort of promotion network, but also they help you with your sponsorships, and they can create merchandise. And it's like, you know, it's also a branded sort of like, they, you know, are more education focused. And like a lot of, especially like in EduTube, this was something I kind of learned at VidCon this year, is that the edutainment side of YouTube is very heavily focused towards like science. And, you know,
nerds.
like Green Brothers and Crash Course, like science and history.
Sure.
Great. But they're kind of trying to figure out, how do we get into the humanities? Because there's this huge blind spot in educational YouTube about the humanities, because it's a lot harder to, in my opinion, it's a lot harder to explain critical thinking, because critical thinking is like, or at least the way I learned it is, okay, read a bunch of essays. Here's the theory you're applying. Now go apply it. You know, it's about praxis. It's about giving someone the tools to go do it themselves, rather than teaching them like a history or a history of a topic. But they're trying to get into it. So that I think is why they wanted me, because there's like, especially like just working with PBS, like it's there's definitely an increased interest in focusing on the humanities, on the education side of YouTube.
That is very exciting. And so is it going, what I'm curious about is, what, obviously you now have a sponsorship, you have a ton of subscribers. You said when you stopped half-assing it, that's when it really took off. What is the tipping point, you know, to suddenly be able to make money doing this and pay a few bills? Is it, what's the number of subscribers? What's the number of videos you had to do? When did it really start turning just for you?
Well, I always coasted pretty well. Like I always kind of figured out how to make just enough money to like pay my bills, but not pay my student loans.
Nice.
And it also depended on platform, because like part of the reason why I resisted YouTube for so long was I was on another platform called Blip.TV up until like 2014, I think, 2014, 2015. And I basically had no YouTube presence before that. So like, even though my channel, like you, it says like I joined 2013, I didn't start uploading to it until 2016. So pretty much all of my subscribers I've gotten in the last 2 years. And the truth is I've had like different revenue streams, through all of those times. Cause I think it's really wise to try to diversify, just because you never know when some company's going to get bought out. You never know when YouTube's going to demonetize everything. You never know when like, Squarespace is going to explode. I don't know, something. Cause it's really hard to, it's really hard to predict, stability, because I've definitely been like deeply affiliated with companies that in a year would no longer exist. And then you have to find a new, way to make money. So I guess Patreon has been pretty stable for the last few years. I've had pretty good luck with YouTube ad revenue. I'm just starting out with sponsorships, so we'll see how that goes. But again, this is only within the last 2 years.
Working in journalism, I have no idea what it's like to be unstable. I worked for Yahoo, which I thought was stable, and then all of a sudden, nope.
But I don't think there's any one, like, because I know a lot of, there's easy to find YouTubers with, like, millions of subscribers, and then you go on their Patreon, and it's, like, $300 a month.
Yeah.
And this is actually something that they've started to figure out how to quantify, which is like engagement, like subscriber count on YouTube versus patron count on Patreon. Mm. A lot of it does have to do with my best business decision has actually been to make fewer videos and to invest heavily in them.
Mm.
Cause it drives engagement higher and, also attracts an older audience, and older people tend to have expendable income and are more likely to throw $2 per month at you on Patreon. It really depends, because if you're attracting a younger audience, merchandise is a better way to make money. And if you have an older audience, Patreon might be a little bit more reliable.
Hmm.
Because I haven't done merchandise yet. Everyone keeps telling me I should, but I'm just like, because like the idea of a cartoon face of me just makes me want to crawl under a rock and never come out.
That's understandable.
Yeah. What's that?
Do you do special stuff for Patreon, or do you just post your videos there sooner? How does
nope.
it work?
Well, I keep it simple because I cannot be trusted to do anything, you know, like more complicated. I have two tiers. Lower tier is you get early access. Higher tier, name in the credits. Boom. That's it.
Cool. Nice.
Those are my two tiers.
That's still something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I think the question we've been waiting to ask is, why Transformers? Tell me everything. How many times have you seen these movies? I want to know everything. I'm so curious.
I love Transformers. I always have. Like, I kind of, like, when we were talking earlier, like, about how that scene of John Turturro peeing on, or rather, Bumblebee peeing on John Turturro.
I wish it was the other way around.
Yeah, Transformers 6 is coming. The image of Bumblebee peeing on John Turturro was like a formative moment in my life, and I kind of joke about that, but it's kind of true. Because like when that movie came out, again, it was like 2007, just graduated college, nothing to do, and I'd always kind of like Transformers, so I was like, I saw it opening night, and it was just such a bizarre movie. My brain kind of cut out the weird parts and kind of remembered like a basic action movie. And a couple days later, my roommate was like, I can't believe that robot peed on John Turturro. And I was like, what? And she was like, I think, yeah, we actually had a little animatic of that scene where she's like, yeah, the robot like peed on beloved character actor John Turturro. I think there was even a boing. And I like, I was like, that didn't happen. I have to go see it again. And like, I saw it again and again, and I just kind of got obsessed with it. And I'd always kind of had like a fixation on Michael Bay, because I definitely, like, I took an action movies class in college. Michael Bay was like sort of just like his contempt was so artistic. It was just like he had figured out how to visualize like contempt for his audience in a way that audiences love. It's so bizarre. But I have just always been fascinated with Michael Bay, always been fascinated with the success of those movies. But I also just really like Transformers. Like, I love the comic. Like, the comics are my favorite. I also like Transformers Prime, but like the IDW comics are like some of my favorite comics in the history of the medium. So I think I see a lot of potential in those movies. And I, whenever there's something that I see potential that was not realized, that tends to be the thing that I get really fixated on. And I think you see that as like a trend in my channel. It's like my favorite Disney movies to talk about are the ones that are kind of okay. Not the really, really bad ones, but also not the really, really good ones.
So how many times have you seen Transformers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 each?
I've probably seen one dozens of times.
How do you do it? How do you sit through a movie? Do you watch like just one scene? How do you do it?
Well, aside from like the editing, it's been 10, 11 years since it came out. Just opportunity to watch it, or sometimes I'd force my friends to watch it, or like, let's get drunk and watch Transformers. I probably cumulatively have seen it dozens of times.
Wow.
Two, maybe five times. Three, I've seen all the way through three or four times, and only then it was for that video where I'm like, I can't remember what happens in this
right.
movie, because three is like amazing to me, and like how impossible it is to remember what happens in it, because that was just like when Michael Bay was just did not care, totally ready to be out of this franchise, but then he wanted to make Pain and Gain, so Paramount was like, if you do another Transformers movie, you can make Pain and Gain.
I hope they did it in that voice.
Michael, you have to make another Optimus movie.
If you have a robot pee on a beloved character actor one more time, you get to make your passion project.
Pain and Gain is a passion project. It's like the biggest movie for some people.
Yeah.
That was a little indie.
I kind of love Pain and Gain just because I feel like it is Michael Bay's magnum opus. You know, it's just like, because Michael Bay is obviously a huge fan of the Coen brothers. And he, because he keeps sniping their actors. And that was like his Coen brothers movie. And it's really interesting to see like what Michael Bay Coen brothers movie looks like, because if you watch it, you can see all those little telltale Coen signs about like, you know, and especially like his, you know, fascination on like, you know, misanthropy. It's very like 90s Coen. But anyway, four and five I've only seen two and a half times all the way through, aside from editing the series, and five I've only seen twice.
Come on, you gotta see it again.
Five, it was funny because like five, when I saw it the first time, I was like, this isn't terrible. And then the second time I saw it, I'm like, this is the worst one. What was I thinking?
Are you excited for Bumblebee?
I've got some like Stockholm syndrome with Bumblebee. I'm like, I don't want to get my hopes up, because like Bay has basically nothing to do with it. And then it's like, this is the first Transformers movie that Bay had basically nothing to do with. And it's like the Shia LaBeouf is a girl in this one. And he has a bunch of actors that I like. And of course the director of Kubo and the Two Strings, and like it has the makings for like at least a fun movie, and it doesn't look a hot mess, or at least the trailer doesn't look terrible. But I don't want to get my hopes up, because I don't think Hasbro is a very good studio. Honestly, within franchises like this, you kind of need a Kevin Feige, and Hasbro does not have one, nor do I think they need one. So I'm trying not to get my hopes up.
It's funny to even think of it as a Marvel-type franchise, because they're anthropomorphized, but they're not humanoid, so it's hard for me to really care that much.
I thought your point was so interesting, that every character in these movies, like, they all hate each other. I had never noticed. I think I had seen, definitely saw the first one. I might have seen the second or third. I have a younger brother, though. And yeah, as soon as one of your videos pointed that out, I was like, yes, every single person, it's like contempt for each other that I guess kind of mirrors what you're saying is Michael Bay's contempt for
and himself, like the protagonists hate themselves too.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a very tangible through line in all of Michael Bay's movies, except for arguably The Island. But I think it's much, much, much more pronounced in the Transformers movies. And I don't really know why. Like, I feel like Michael Bay is inadvertently making his statement on modern masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, Pain and Gain. Obviously, Pain and Gain is much more consciously fascinated with what is masculinity. I mean, obviously, if you've seen it, because it's like, you know, since the main characters are bodybuilders who murder or try to. I think also it kind of just mirrors his own personal contempt for the franchise. That's personally why I think these characters have such contempt for each other, is because Michael Bay just does not want to be here.
You know what? So yep. It makes me wonder. I mean, Michael Bay could pretty much do anything in the world, but he continues to make them. And I think about someone like Adam Sandler, right? He has made some decent dramas. You know, I think that, like,
I love him.
Yeah, we can say that when he is with the right filmmaker, with Noah Baumbach or someone, he can act. I mean, he doesn't have a huge range, but he's interesting when he's with Paul Thomas Anderson. But he continues to make these garbage movies on the side for Netflix, or maybe really as the main course for his career. And do you think that, you know, Bay doesn't want to be doing these things? Do you think he'd rather be making all Pain and Gain type movies? Why does he keep doing it?
I think Michael Bay has a lot in common with James Cameron and George Lucas in that filmmaking, after a certain point, becomes a means to an end. And in this case, the end is pioneering new technologies and getting to be the guy who tests them out. And I think Michael Bay just really, like, if you see, like, what is he into? What arises his passions, like, in, like, the extra materials of these, the extra features of, like, the Transformers movies? He's so uninterested in, like, the characters. He maybe is a little interested in his leading men, but he's so interested in, like, the camera and the, like, I get to try out this new camera. We get to try out this new 3D technique. We are really interested in, like, sound mixing. Because, like, I have met Michael Bay. The one time I met him was at Paramount was doing a demonstration of their new mixing stage. And they had the department heads for the entire, all of the sound department, like, you know, the sound editor, the sound designer, the sound mixer, and Michael Bay. And they were super into, like, integrating, like, 10.2, which still hasn't happened yet and probably never will because it's silly. They were super into, like, just all the ways that you can, you know, enhance the film-going experience. Because he's not into streaming. He wants to, like, enhance and make better the film-going experience. And so, like, he's a technology guy. So I think with Transformers, the story is a means to an end. He's really here for the, getting to try out new expensive technologies, which he would not get to do with movies like Pain and Gain.
You know, it's interesting you say the story is a means to an end, because I find myself a lot of times, and it's also because my mind is also in a million other places, but not remembering what happens in movies even like a week or a day or whatever it is after seeing them. And you addressed that in one of your videos there, where partly it's because the frame is just so kinetic. There's so much going on all the time, but also story is not really the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the weird thing about that, like, the video I did about how, like, the editing is so poor in the Transformers movies is, I know Michael Bay knows better because, like, I know who he went to school with. He went to school with one of my professors. Like, he learned this stuff. These is, like, really, really basic editing techniques. And I've seen him talk about it in, like, you know, in talks and, in interviews and stuff. So, like, these are things I know he knows. He just doesn't care. And he knows his audience doesn't care.
What do you say to people who are, like, super? There are people, obviously, who are big Transformers fans, not just because they like action, they care about it. And so what do you think of, why do people love it so much or care about it so much beyond, maybe being attached to it from being children?
I don't actually see many people be attached to the Transformers movies. That's part of why I picked it, because it's not like one of these franchises like Marvel or DC where people will cut you if you dare criticize it. Like, criticizing, mm-hmm. like, and I think part of it is because, you know, people know that I'm just like a total Transformers stan from a franchise standpoint. Like, I literally have a Starscream collection. I really don't see much resistance, but that might also just be the audience I've cultivated. But I think Transformers, the movies, are one of the, like, people just don't have strong opinions about them, except for maybe, like...
Children?
Cars.
Children, yeah. They like the technology. They like the action. And, you know, they don't really form emotional attachments to it in the way that they might, like, Man of Steel.
This is a non sequitur, but I dated a guy once who told me for a while, he was like, oh yeah, I really loved Transformers as a kid. And I was like, great. And then one time we were hanging out and he put on like an old VHS of one of the animated feature films. And I was watching it and I heard whispering and I looked over and he knew every single word to this movie. Like,
wow.
Stayed the night.
It was bizarre. It was like that.
You were like,
whew. Yeah, I was like, tonight's the night. No, I think I was like, I need to get out of here.
Actually, you know what? I kind of want to, I wonder, could I mouth along the words to the first franchise? I feel like that's a soft maybe. I might be able to be that guy.
I bet you could, at least like the big scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely the... anything with Anthony Anderson.
I forgot that was his name.
Are you glad to see Shia LaBeouf freed from the grasp of Michael Bay? Or do you not care about him?
No, I don't care about him. I tend not to care about actors very much.
Yeah, fair.
He got on Steven Spielberg's bad side, and that's why his career kind of went away.
Yeah.
But I think that's just sort of like, well, it sucks to be you, but at the same time, come on, buddy. I have a really hard time feeling bad for you.
Yeah. No, yeah. He's not a really super sympathetic figure, unless working for Michael Bay scrambled his brains, you know.
He didn't need Michael Bay. He had everything, and he just kind of got careless and arrogant. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Here we are.
When he screened all of his movies in the city, I remember he saved, like, Transformers were the ones he was sleeping through. Yeah.
I went to that. I went to him doing that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
To report on it. Yeah. There was, like, a bunch of... there were so many people there who I was interviewing them, like, why are you doing this? And they're school's out. We don't have anything else to do. No one was like, I love Shia LaBeouf. They're like, more like, this is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is weird. But at the same time, I do a lot of weird things that I have a hard time explaining. So, you know, no shade.
You know, another one I wanted to ask you about was the Dear Stephanie Meyer, which got a lot of buzz as well. That was an interesting one. I remember my first job out of college was after, like, I did an internship in a post-production house working on the World Series of Poker, was for this company called Bauer. And they just actually sold their teen magazines to AMI, which is Donald Trump's favorite publisher. But back in the day, Bauer, as back in the days like a couple months ago, Bauer, up until then, Bauer was making teen magazines along with tabloids like Life and Style and In Touch. And I didn't work for the tabloids, but I worked for the web department, and I helped out and even did some of the writing for some like the teen magazines websites. And this was right as Twilight blew up, because I graduated school in 2008. And that was when the first Twilight movie came out. And I think I read the half of the first book and I said, I get it. But it was interesting to me because those things kind of dominated my life in a weird way. Not that I was super into it. It wouldn't be bad if I was into it. But I was kind of, you know, paying the bills by watching Twilight from afar in a weird way. And so it's interesting to see you revisit it and sort of reconsider it after the whole hype and backlash and then double backlash and triple backlash kind of dies down. So what prompted you to do that?
Man, I don't know. I have this bad problem of after a video comes out, like my brain, like, you know, it's kind of like I have to delete it from my hard drive space.
Yeah.
Because there was a very good reason for this. I don't remember what it was. Well, I don't remember what, like, because someone said something and it kind of ticked me off. It was like someone said something about Stephanie Meyer where I just kind of was like, wait a minute. Because I had been thinking a lot about her relationship to E.L. James and how I do think that E.L. James is a bad faith actor. And I do think E.L. James deserves a lot of the criticism she gets, mm-hmm. or perhaps is kind of under-criticized because people criticize the book and not her actions. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of like had this like, you know, flash where I remembered what it was like in 2009 where it was like so many ad hominem attacks on Stephanie Meyer. And that tended to dominate the narrative more than what we see today, which tends to have circled back to criticism of the text, which is valid. I don't agree with a lot of it, but I think it's valid to criticize the text. But Stephanie Meyer, you know, she hardly said anything. But she, like, just because she was so successful and who she was successful with, she was held under such intense scrutiny. You know, and it's just like one of these things that I, you know, felt had not really been discussed or reevaluated in the way that a lot of other things have.
And so when you went back and watched it, what, you know, obviously in your videos, you're going to say, yes, there were these problems. You know, she's obsessed with Edward and, you know, mm-hmm. she doesn't have much agency. So what about it did you decide when you rewatch it that, you know, this is not so bad or just not as bad in compared to other stuff?
I just think there's a double standard that's not being addressed because I think a lot of the criticism of Twilight, it's like, okay, but it's kind of like criticism of Disney where I feel like it's like you're looking for something to be offended by. And I know that sounds really bad because I talk about problematic texts all the time, but you know, there's like the element of there's these elements that are present in a lot of fantasy fiction, like the age disparity. He's 100, he's 17, or like the imprinting thing, which is which I kind of think is not poorly written, but that's a really common fantasy trope. Mm-hmm.
It's in Hotel Transylvania 3.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, they do the thing called zinging.
Oh, wow. Oh,
where their eyes like glaze over when they find the person they love.
The vampires?
Any monster or person.
Oh, interesting. It's werewolves in Twilight, right?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. No, we saw every single movie opening night in college. They were so much fun.
I think my point is that I felt like Twilight was fairly unremarkable in terms of the tropes that it used. Mm-hmm. And I think there was like, a lot of overreaction and like, cause a big criticism resistance to that video that I made was people like, well, it's Mormon propaganda. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm not seeing it. Like I see the Mormon influence, but I don't think she's trying to convert anybody. I think this is just fiction that comes from someone with that worldview. Mm-hmm. And, I don't think she's, like that's just something I don't really know what to do with it because I kind of feel like it's like the criticism just kind of went to 11 for fiction that's like it's not the best ever, but it's not that remarkable. These tropes have been used before and much weirder. Like I think Buffy is a pretty good example.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you hear from Stephanie Meyer?
No.
No.
No. I don't hear from anybody.
Really?
I heard from James Gunn when I did talk about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, what did he say?
He said that he thought that there was interesting criticism, although there was a lot he didn't agree with.
Okay.
Which I assumed was the bit where I criticized Mantis, but he didn't say which he didn't agree with.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that like there are filmmakers who will engage with that. I mean, Rian Johnson's a great example of someone who at least is willing to talk or, you know, humor the people who criticize him.
I need to call out Rian Johnson. This is a call out. Calling out Rian Johnson.
Whoa.
He's a big Phantom of the Opera fan,
mm-hmm.
and he has not seen Phantom of the Opera, Love Never Dies. This is a call out, Rian Johnson. I have it on Blu-ray. I live like 10 miles away. We can have a watch party. It'll be fine.
You know where Rian Johnson lives?
I'm flattered that you think he's listening.
Rian Johnson listens to all of our podcasts.
Yeah, right. Call out, Rian. I know you're listening.
He's very online.
It's going to be like...
I don't actually know where he lives. I assume he lives in LA.
It's going to be like 40 minutes into our podcast. Rian Johnson is going to be chilling out at home, watching, you know, playing with his dog, listening to the Phantom Files like every Monday.
Like, there's a reason I haven't watched that.
Yeah.
I'm saving it.
All right. Now that we have Rian Johnson listening... What is, why does he need to see this movie?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a movie. It's a show.
Oh.
And I just, yeah. Well, it's a sequel to Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera.
Oh my
and
god.
Someone tagged me on Twitter when he was like tweeting with someone else about like, he's like, I will stop and watch Phantom of the Opera no matter what I'm doing. If there's Phantom of the Opera to be seen somewhere, I will go see it. And someone was like, you mean the movie? And he's like, no. And I'm like, this man knows what's up.
Yeah.
I want to watch Love Never Dies with him, because Love Never Dies is like, it's one of the worst things you've ever seen, but in an imminently watchable way. It's like, it's terrible, but it's watchably terrible.
You know, so. A bunch of years ago when I worked at BuzzFeed, I wrote a story about RIPD and why it was criminally underrated. What is your take on that?
I haven't seen RIPD.
Oh, no. I love RIPD.
But it feels like my showgirls, maybe.
So Ryan Johnson, if you hear this, get in touch with Lindsay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've got a couch next to a fish tank.
All the fixins.
His favorite. His two favorite things. Couches and fish tanks.
Hideously embarrassing. Yeah, cause I don't have a permanent house, but I do have roommates. they promised to leave us alone.
Just the
It'll
two
be great.
Of you. So. Beyond the Phantom of the Opera, what on stage? I'm curious about the YouTube community, right? Like, it's my girlfriend works for YouTube, and you know there are great YouTubers and some people who the commenters are often not the world's best. And I'm curious, as a woman talking about film on YouTube, it would seem to me that maybe you could possibly be a target for less than kind words.
No.
What has your experience been like with that? Because just doing it. I mean, even if you're just saying milquetoast things about film, I feel like you'd be a target.
Well, it's sometimes I want, because like I definitely get targeted. I often wonder why, because it's like, even if I do say milquetoast things, I think that like my persona is so goofy that I don't understand why they're so threatened by me. Because you don't target people that you're not threatened by. But that said, it's like, I think most of the negative, or not negative, but harassy comments I get are just randos who found me through YouTube's algorithm. Mm. They don't necessarily know who I am. They're just like, I don't like that you're talking and you need to stop. That said, it's gotten to a point where like I get thousands of comments a day, and it's impossible for me to look at even a fraction of them. So I have people that moderate them, but I'm sorry. Like, if you leave me a comment on YouTube, 99.999%, I just don't see.
That makes me feel a lot better about all the comments you haven't responded to.
I comment that your ketchup bottle moved in the background would finally get.
You know, to be clear, I wasn't saying you do milquetoast. I'm saying even if you were to do milquetoast, be clear.
I mean, I think part of it's because I talk about academia, and like any academic discourse tends to be a lot more radical to any mainstream discourse. Like, I mean, radical, but like, you know, just talking about like, radical. But you know, this is a problem that I often face, just because like with the increased, you know, polarization, and there's a big problem that honestly drives me crazy about like YouTubers talking about topics that they have no clue what they're talking about. They'll just kind of parrot talking points and use phrases like cultural Marxism, like that means anything. And
it sounds awesome, you know, to me, cultural Marxism, by the way. I would love it if that was a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a thing. It's like, you know, like the Frankfurt School existed, but it's like, it's still kind of a little bit of a Nazi dog whistle. And
I mean, like a real, you know what I'm saying? Like if Marxism was in our culture. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the next episode of Whole Plate is about Marxism. So that's going to be fun. But you know, it's just like, you have these really complex topics that people don't really understand. I mean, I barely understand Marxism. But they talk about them like they do, and then that kind of leads to other people talking and or thinking that they know about these topics just because they saw someone talk about them on YouTube. And I know that kind of can lead to a sort of elitism, but I do think it is important to have a solid foundation of knowledge when you're attacking a topic. And YouTube has been a real big double-edged sword on that front, because people will think they have a solid foundation of knowledge, but they don't. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize they don't. And they'll be spreading misinformation, thinking that they're, you know, speaking truth to power. And that is kind of, that troubles me much more than the toxicity of the culture.
So you talked about Marxism being the next whole plate video. What do you have coming up?
Well, besides that, we're hopefully going to finish the whole plate by the end of the year. I'm also, like, the thing, oddly, I get the most requests for, more than anything, is the Beauty and the Beast remake from last year.
Mm.
So we're finally going to tackle that. Yeah.
People are desperate to know about your take on it?
Well, I mean, like, because I was not so secret about the fact that I really hated it.
Oh, okay.
And people were, so I was like, you know what? Maybe it's time. It's time. Because we literally just rewatched it like earlier this morning. I mean, morning for me. So that's going to be fun. I'm doing a bunch of Disney stuff this year.
Interesting.
Might finally tackle Robert Moses. I think that might be like the season finale in December. That'll be good. And also, I'm still working on PBS's tie-in with The Great American Read, which is called It's Lit, and that's on PBS Digital Studios channel, and that, I think, posts every 3 weeks.
Is Donald Trump Jr. involved in that? It's Lit?
PBS? Oh, no, It's Lit?
Yeah.
He used
that phrase a few weeks ago, and everyone's like, oh, no.
Did he?
Yeah.
No, my brand. I didn't know that.
No, my brand.
My brand. That's great. Oh, no, my brand.
My brand.
That's my Instagram handle, Jordan the Brand.
Oh, no, my brand.
That's a great 21st century lament. Oh, no, my brand.
I wonder if that's taken. I might just change my Twitter name for that.
Oh, yeah. Please do. Oh, right, man.
Yes.
You got to beat me
brand.
To it, though.
it's not taken. Oh, it's not taken.
God,
oh, that's
nice.
Tempting.
There goes my like brand.
I don't like my Twitter name because I chose it in 2008. It's like, I'm the Lindsay Ellis. why did I stick with that? Although I'm verified, I don't think I'm allowed to change my name. Crap. All right. Oh, no, my brand is yours.
Thank
only
God.
Begrudgingly.
I'm verified too. So
am I.
I'll think of someone else. We are just all too
someone.
Cool here at the Fan
Whoever's
Files.
Listening can
grab
my
it.
Ryan Johnson just took it.
deservedly so.
So people who are obviously now, I mean, listen, I'm sure most people who are listening to this have heard of you because they like YouTube and they like film and you know what, maybe some people have, I don't know, now I'm saying like no one's heard of you, Lindsay. What
yeah.
I'm saying is that if for people who haven't seen your videos yet on who are listening to the Phantom Files,
mm-hmm.
what is the YouTube address, how do they find you?
Well, if my YouTube URL is
http://.
Yeah, the username is Shea Apocalypse. It's kind of like my my company's name is Shea Apocalypse, so it's CHEZAPOCTube. But it's easiest just to go to YouTube.com and search my name, because my channel name is just my name.
Okay. All right, that's simple. Lindsay Ellis.
Cool.
Lindsay with an A.
Yep. It's like, because you're like, what's your channel's name? I'm like, I have a problem with commitment.
Well,
you can also search for the whole plate and that'll get you there.
Did people ever arrive there thinking you're a food vlog?
I bet.
A food blog?
Yeah.
Actually, I have not heard that one. Because people are like, what is the whole plate a reference to? And I'm like, I just thought that line was funny. I'm sorry. There's no like deep, like double, I wanted there to be a play on words, but I could not think of one because most film studies terms are really, really like no one outside of film academia has heard of them. Like someone suggested Cahier du Cybertron as a play of Cahier yeah. du Cinema, which is a mm-hmm. French magazine that I think Truffaut edited back in the 1950s. Like no one is going to get that. So I was just like, it's going to be a Transformers reference. It's going to be something I think is funny.
Cool.
If you did a video about food in movies for a whole plate, you could probably get a lot of subscribers thinking you're a food vlog.
Probably.
That's a free tip.
Like,
you need growth.
Free tip.
You clearly need growth tips. That's
no,
your first sponsorship too.
I need beauty blog. Like just foundation and like this is my Bumblebee inspired look.
True.
Ooh, yeah. Oh, I'm doing that on my vlog. called Oh No My Brand.
Yeah. my beauty called yeah. Oh No My Brand. My brand is my new line of beauty products inspired by Transformers.
Those are my two backup careers, a beauty yeah. vlogger or a conservative columnist. Either way, yeah. you can be the worst person and make so much money.
Oh, yeah, and bloggers are good.
All right,
people.
Okay, fine.
I wish Oh No My Brand would have been perfect for my YouTube channel. So
yeah.
I'm sad that it's only like how many years later that I figured it out.
Well, I like to make people regret things. That's what I'm that's what I'm here for.
I'm really good at that. Yeah. I also have a lot of those, so.
Yeah,
so
same.
So we do this thing where we ask people what their Twitter handles are so that once people watch your YouTube videos, they can go and say, Lindsay, that was so smart.
It's the Lindsay Ellis.
Oh, right. You literally just told me that. See, it's I have a terrible memory. Movies, it's, conversations. It's, you know.
Oh No My Brand. At Oh No My Brand. But the no is a zero. And the A is a, and the A and and is a four.
I can feel like your followers going up real fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're going to be like looking for Oh No My Brand. And
now.
Hold on, I'm sorry. I'm registering this. Sorry. Talk amongst yourselves. I've got to register my brand.
Ryan Johnson's laughing so hard at home right now.
Those crazy kids.
Yeah. He's like, oh boy, what are they going to think of next? I'm going to kill Luke again.
You're resurrected. Yeah. Kill him. I didn't even watch Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. Not Love Never Dies. Love Never Dies.
I hope they bring Lando back for episode 9 just so they can kill him too and like really piss off.
He is. Billy Dee Williams.
I know, yeah. But I hope it's because they can. I love Lando, but I think that'd be really funny.
Oh, he's totally going to die.
Yeah. Just like now they're just in full on troll mode.
Yeah.
I would love that. Emily, how do people get in touch with you on the internet?
Oh man, I'm Emily G Monster.
Sorry, I thought you meant me.
That's okay. I'm Emily G Monster on Twitter. That's it. Leave me alone on everything else.
Yeah, leave her alone on everything else, except for coffee.
Oh yeah, on Twitter if you want to send me money for a coffee, which someone already did.
Yeah,
I just put
a
it
famous
up recently.
Person.
Yeah,
I was trying to send her 69 cents, but that's not an option.
No,
unfortunately.
No.
That's how mature I am, the host of this Sci-Fi Network show. And I am at Jordan Zacharin. At this point, if you don't know how to spell my name, you're like most people. But come on, you listen to my podcast, so you can get that right. Mm-hmm. All right, Lindsay, thank you so much for being here. This was fun.
I have literally already, I've just got Oh No My Brand on Twitter.
Oh!
So it's mine. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. But
you better make use of it, because I'll be very bitter if it just sits fallow.
It's going to be huge.
Now you can find me at Oh No My Brand. At Oh No My Brand.
We're making Fine. History. She now has one. She now has one follower. It is at Ryan Johnson.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.